Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, this is America, my home, sweet home. God bless America.
God bless America. It's the
gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2023, Season 5, Episode 3. That was Enchantment with God Bless America. And I wanted to start the show this evening with that song, One, to dedicated to our amazing guest this evening, Mr. Kevin Wayne Johnson. He is the CEO and founder of Writing for the Lord Ministries. We also know him as Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson. And that song is dedicated to Pastor Kevin because he has traveled this world, but America is his home. We do not embrace this country enough. If we think about our black contribution to this country and the sacrifice that our people have made. This is to home, because we're often told, why don't we go back home? My guest and I this evening will allow you to understand you are at home. So welcome live home on Tribe Family Channel, Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson. And he will be expounding this evening upon his experiences and role in leadership, service, and ministry as a man of honor while growing up black in America. He's used and sharpened tools of faith, education, setting goals, being focused, laser focused, if I might throw in, and the determination of having a plan of action. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome live on Tribe Family Channel, Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson. How are you doing, sir?
Hey there. I am doing very, very well. Thank you so much. And listen, I appreciate all the wonderful work that you're doing and your leadership and how you keep us inspired and motivated. So I'm doing well, and pray that you and your family are doing well as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is part of your leadership and undergirding of Tribe Family Channel and other supporters like yourself that appreciate our philanthropy and keep us on the air. So thank you for your sponsorship. And again, thank you for your leadership. Now, I know that your life's ministry and work as a husband and a father and a man in the position and roles of leadership have taken you all over the world. But I would like for you to first tell us about Kevin Wayne Johnson, the child growing up, and the disposition of your adolescence.
Well, my hometown is Richmond, Virginia. That's where the majority of my family, both paternal and maternal, reside. And I am the son of a U.S. Marine, one younger brother, so just the two of us, two boys. And we moved around quite a bit as a youth, because in the military, when the orders come, they're not negotiable. You have to move. So I spent quite a bit of time in the state of Virginia, but also some time in South Carolina and also North Carolina. And my dad, as a Marine, served actually three tours of duty overseas fighting in America's wars, twice in Vietnam and once in Okinawa, Japan. We did not travel with him internationally, but as he moved around here in the States, we moved with him. So Dad is the oldest of seven children, and back in the 50s in Richmond, Virginia, there really wasn't much opportunity for young African-American man, so he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. Interestingly enough, he served for 20 years, and while he was serving, he was commissioned, and he was a junior officer, so he actually retired after 20 years as a junior officer. And my mom, and by the way, they're high school sweethearts, Maggie Walker High School in Richmond, Virginia. They got married, and she went to serve as a civilian in the federal government for quite a number of years as well. And I followed her path. I thought about the military, but decided not to do that. I served as a civilian in the federal government for 34 years. I was a frontline leader, a mid-level leader, and then a senior-level leader with the federal government for 34 years. And I actually retired 5 years ago. So that's the track that I took. And it was my mom that was very instrumental in convincing me that working with the federal government would be a good career. Interestingly enough, in parallel with that, I also have been actively engaged in ministry. So I've been actively involved in ministry leadership for the last 22 years, serving the local church as a deacon, as an associate pastor, as well as a senior pastor during those 22 years and still serving. So I've had a very unique opportunity to serve as a leader, starting out in the home, because my younger brother, who's 3.5 years younger than I am, he was born on the Marine Corps base, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, but he was born with a mental disability. And so while Dad was away fighting in America's wars, Mom and I and my brother were here in the States, and I was helping Mom really to raise him, to protect him, to advocate for him, and to support and serve him. And I really began to understand what being a leader was all about in the home. And it transitioned out into the community and then ultimately into the workplace and also in parallel with the ministry work that I've done. So that's sort of a backdrop on me. Mom and Dad were very, very instrumental in making sure that their sons went to church and understood how to have a relationship with the Lord and to understand the importance of what that means, unconditional love, care, value, respect for other people based upon scripture. And that transcended over into my teenage years and then my years in college at Virginia Commonwealth University and then ultimately into the workplace and even the work that I'm doing now. It all starts in the home. So that's a little bit about Kevin Johnson in terms of my journey from a little fella to where I am now. And a lot of the work that I do has those foundational roots that Mom and Dad taught me, that they learned from their mom and dad. And it's been a phenomenal journey and a wonderful ride. And, you know, I tell my three sons that what's really important in life is to make sure that as a man, be a phenomenal husband and to be a great father and to always be there to stand in the gap for your family in every way that you can. No one's perfect, which means that you're going to make mistakes, but guess what? We learn from our mistakes to get better and to help to teach others what not to do, as well as teaching others what to do based upon what we do right and the mistakes that we make. And so that's where the unconditional love comes, because no one is perfect, so we have to love people's perfect imperfections, and that's part of the life journey.
Ooh, Lord, have mercy. Now, I had something that I was going to say if I could sum it up, and do you know you snatched it right out of my head and said it?
And I said, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just going to let them know that then I am speechless, because what I was going to say, you said, and it was, it all starts at home. If I were to have to summarize what everything that you just said into one sentence, it all starts at home. And then here, yep. Lo and behold, I'm just waiting for you to finish so I can and you said it. And it is so indicative of why we wanted to have this show, because we are promoting the love of reading as the key to learning. But how we begin at home is what matters. And this is a family-friendly show, so you can join us and bring the kids, call 563-999-3778, or you can listen online at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. We are a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand, and that is also the home of Gumbo for the Soul publications. So our books focus on literacy, adoption and foster care, women's health and breast cancer, men's health and breast cancer, and those men and women series are so entitled Men and Women of Honor. So Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson, I also want to thank you for being a supporter and contributor to our Men and Women of Honors series. We will be dropping that February 1st, 2023, and it has been a long-awaited induction. It will be in honor of our 20th anniversary. We toil bringing out the best in ourselves because there are things that we do not want to address in our community. So first and foremost, I would like to start with thanking you for sharing the intimate details about your brother and the level of service that prompted out of you and your mother. As a man, well then, as a child, you are involuntarily inducted into the service and the care of another individual besides yourself. And that is where we start. We start with caring for one another. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but, you know, God wants us to love each other as he loves us. And how we prepare our children to take on the role of caring for themselves and while maintaining the empathy for others is part of life's lessons best learned at home. Oftentimes, children leave the home and they're not prepared for the outside world, whether it's education, whether it's interacting at the age level that they should be exhibiting social skills and good behavior and a respect for authority, meaning the teacher and the government of which, you know, your family has worked in and been in service of. And then also, I just want to quickly enter a comment to salute your father. Thank you for his service and protecting the freedom that we so carelessly take for granted. So we're going to hop back over to how to prepare our children in the home to have what you exhibit and have obviously imparted in your children and share with your wife, this marriage of longevity, mirroring your parents, a life of marriage and longevity. And that is absolutely beautiful. And these elements and values in your life, they come at a price. I don't want anyone to think that everything that they see on social media and through your leaderships and your talks and your teachings and your speeches when you're out there at the, you know, sites, universities and what have you, that this does not come without a price. The sacrifice is your service and putting yourself second. So tell us in that fledgling or formative years of growing up, how do those values transcend into your raising your children, and what advice would you offer to other parents? Not being judgy, none of us are, you know, without mistake, mistakes or flaws. So the point here is to value your leadership and cleave to your wisdom in preparing our children for the world. How do we do that? Go ahead.
I think for me, it has a lot to do with making sure that we walk the walk and talk the talk as best we can be consistent. Again, nobody's perfect, but we always ask everybody within our sphere of influence to do your best, right? Because doing your best is much more realistic than trying to be perfect, because no one is perfect. And what I had an opportunity to see in the Johnson family are men, my dad and my uncles on my paternal side, stay true to their wives and to stay married for a lifetime. So all of my uncles, they've all been married like 40 plus years. And
wow.
And prior to my mom passing away, dad and mom, high school sweethearts, had been married for 3 decades. I lost mom to pancreatic cancer, but dad did get remarried, and he's been married to his wife now for going on a couple of decades. So I saw that loyalty, commitment, dedication. Yeah, absolutely. Now, on my maternal side, it was different. But on my paternal side, I got a chance to see that. And so seeing that for me kind of normalized the expectations. And so as I'm dating, I'm letting the young ladies know that I'm dating, that, you know, over time, if you're going to marry me, we're going to be married for a lifetime. This is not one of those things where, you know, you get upset or you get mad or we have differences of opinion and you threaten to leave. No, we're going to work it out. We're going to work it through. And so Gail and I will celebrate 30 years of marriage in March.
Congratulations.
and we both made a commitment. We made a commitment to each other while we were dating, before we got married. While we were dating, we made a commitment to each other that we're going to stay married for a lifetime. Now, a lot of that has to do with us understanding holy matrimony and marriage from scriptures. We understand in the book of Genesis where God created marriage, and we understand the man's role in the marriage, and we understand the woman's role in the marriage from scripture, not what the world teaches, but from scripture. And we understand that when a man gets married, he leaves his mother and father and he cleaves to his wife, and that's his new family. And so that's the focus and that's the dedication. And so fast forward from our union, we have 3 sons. And I teach my sons from the time that they're ankle high what it is to be a good father and what it is to be a good husband, because they see it and I model it. I want them to emulate it and I want them to mirror it. I want them to see how a man treats his wife, their mother, and I want them to know and feel what it's like to have a dad that disciplines but also loves. And what that's like. And I tell them all the time, the way that you repay us is to make sure you take care of your wife and that you take care of your children. A man doesn't leave his children. That's just inexcusable. But I tell them why. It takes a man to raise a child. It takes a male to make a child, but it takes a man to raise a child. And I want them to see that and experience that in the home. Again, here we go again, in the home. This is what they learn in the home, so that when they leave, and they're out there on their own, they know how to go about finding a virtuous woman because they saw that in their mom, and then they understand that when they have their children, their responsibility is to be there to protect, to provide comfort, to raise them in a home that's peaceful, not a lot of chaos and confusion and drama, and to take care of the children, not just financially, but take care of your children in terms of giving them comfort and shelter and food and clothing and love. All of that encompasses taking care of the children, not just the financial resources. So that's what I believe, if going back to your question, how I answered it in the very beginning, walk the walk and talk the talk. Be the example, emulate the behavior and the mannerism that you want those in your home to also mirror and emulate. And then you can do that, what I call wash, rinse, and repeat. And then the next generation would do the same. And then one family at a time, we can start to rebuild America, because the foundation of any nation is the family. And if the family unit is not together and is not functioning in a manner in which it was intended, then you see it in our society, and you see it in our nation, and you see it in our country, where things are just out of place, things have gone awry. There's confusion, there's frustration, there's disappointment. Not to say that doesn't happen in the family unit, but it's really escalated because a lot of our children are not getting that parental love and that parental discipline that they need and that they crave, so that when they go out in the community, they can add value to the community and not take away from it. So that's what I firmly believe. I am really, really blessed in that I had a chance to see that in the home. I saw my uncles taken care of and loving their wives, taken care of and loving their children. When we get together for Thanksgiving and Juneteenth and Christmas every year as a family, I mean, this thing has really grown and really spread now because my younger cousins are now parents. And, you know, we have, you know, 50, 60, 70 family members at a gathering. And I sit down and I watch and I'm looking and I'm seeing my younger male cousins treating their wives like they're supposed to, like they're supposed to take care of their children. And I think a lot of it has to do, that's what they saw. So for us, it's normal. Right. And we want that stabilization as best we can in all families. So but it starts at home. If I do that in my home, then my children will go out and they'll do the same. And then they'll teach their children, and we'll be one step closer to making the world a much better place.
So profound, ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in to Tribe Family Channel Literary Festival 2023, Season 5, Episode 3. I have author and pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson. He is the founder, CEO, and publisher of Writing for the Lord Ministries. And my response is going to go to ministry and back to how you began with your response. You stated that we had to walk our talk, and you and your wife, your union is from the biblical example. Now, Pastor T.D. Jakes, if I would have started reflecting on his message and stopped listening to your profound response, I would be over here dying laughing, because Pastor T.D. Jakes says the reason our children behave the way they do is because they don't know we are in church. We're a different person at home than we are in church. And that mm-hmm. is because we are not walking our talk at home. The kids get to church. They don't know who this is sitting beside them, being so kind and nice and, you know, just uprightly. You couldn't tell this person anything about being saved, sanctified, sanctimonious, or whatever, whatever. And the child is looking there confused because we're at home fussing and cussing about these clothes, these schools, the school and everything else. And we have to walk our talk and line up what we are reflecting to our children. So one, walking our talk will ward out the confusion in our children wherever we are, wherever they see us and witness us. And that is allowing them to really know us on a level where we have a level of emotional intelligence. We're not popping off. They can see us and how we think and how we reason and how we respond to the outside world and the adversities that come up against us, or, you know, the like you just finished off and concluded with, you're not saying that, you know, everything is perfect and that, you know, we don't have problems, but it's how we respond to those problems. And this is what we're reflecting in our homes to our children. And this helps shape and mold their outlook and their level of emotional intelligence and how they respond. Now, talking about the longevities of the marriages and the unions and the honor that is upheld in these unions and how the outward reflection of walking your talk and this generational passing down of ethics and values, this is also part of the key to a solid family and sending our children to school feeling safe, feeling protected, and feeling as though they have a stable foundation. Now, you moved around a little bit as a, and this is the first time, I mean the first time that I am finding out that you were a military brat. I didn't know that. And so playing God Bless America just really became more of what I thought I was doing. So that is nothing but God in the midst, because our service members, our leaders, you know, we're taught to love this land. And if we don't embrace where we are, first and foremost, and the sacrifices that those before us have made to this land, then we cannot play a real clear role of leadership as we develop in our journeys, because we don't respect where we are. We're buying the Kool-Aid about go back to somewhere where you've never been. You're here. You belong here. God bless America. And we have to really, really engage more in her freedoms and her liberties. But that is only done by sacrifice, faith, and due diligence. Now, you as a leader and a thought provocateur, because you've spoken in rooms and led people in places that one can only wish and hope to be. So I salute you for your leadership and your conferences and your role and what you personally have sacrificed through your family, because it takes a lot to be at the helm of these types of roles. How in your adult life would you say the love for writing and reading played as a child, because we want our children to have a love for writing and reading. 99% of the battle for learning is reading. Whether you are in sciences, mathematics, chemistry, it doesn't matter. 99% of the problem or the 99% of that equation is to be able to master reading. If you master reading, you will, chances are, master the proper command of the languages in which you have read and the discernment of that knowledge. So growing up, did you have a love for reading which turned into the writing and the leader that you are and the author that you've become?
Well, the answer is definitely yes. I love reading. You know, the earlier we get started, the better. Our brains are like sponges, and they just absorb all of this new and exciting information. Whether it's an article or a book or a newspaper or a magazine, I was really into it. I liked all different types of subjects. I was really attracted to mathematics really, really early on. I was fascinated with the study of meteorology as a child. I was really into the weather, and I was into chemistry, and I liked reading all about it. I also picked up a foreign language early, which also helps to get that brain moving and make it eager and thirsty and hungry for more information. So I'm a student of the French language. So I speak French moderately, not fluently, but moderately. And then I was able to read in French as well as English. And it just really helped to expand your horizons. Gives you good creativity and imagination and innovation in terms of your thought process. It also helps with your study habits because you want to do well in terms of being able to regurgitate the information that you've absorbed. And even today, you know, as I speak, one of the challenges that I always leave with my audience is that we should be reading one book a month, a minimum of one book a month. I have a library in my home filled with books in my home office on the main level and in the basement, just books galore. I save most of the books that I read. I don't save them all. Many of them I do give away to Goodwill or to other people. But over the decades, I have tons and tons of books in my personal library that I'll go back to periodically and I'll read through. And I'll kind of compare what that book may have said 30 years ago to what's happening in our nation today to see if it's still applicable. So I definitely encourage all parents to get their children to reading early as possible, and have it to stimulate interest and have them to develop an interest and a love for knowledge, both a thirst and a hunger that will never quench. And because I did start early, even now, even today as I speak, like I said, I still read a book a month. Sometimes, depending on the type of book and depending on how thick it is, because, you know, books come in all different sizes, I could literally read a book on an airplane. If I'm traveling from where I am in the Baltimore, Maryland, or Washington, D.C. area, if I'm flying down to maybe Florida, or over to Texas, or up to Chicago, or maybe even up to New York. It depends on how long that flight might be. If it's a couple of hours from where I am to, say, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that's about a 2-hour and 15-minute plane ride one way. Depending on the nature of the book and the thickness, I could actually read a book in its entirety on that one flight one way. That's the interest and the enthusiasm that I have gained over the years from reading. So it's very interesting. There is a commercial that reminds us that reading is fundamental. And we also know from the United Negro College Fund that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. So I definitely encourage you. And that's one of the main reasons why I enjoy the work that you do, because you're all about getting us to read and to be actively engaged. And listen, we're part of the Tribe Family Channel Literary Festival. that word literary right there is all about reading, promoting literacy, and that's what I'm all about. That's what I do. And guess what? It also, for me, and it happened for a number of other authors that I talked to, it helped with a very easy transition over to becoming an author, you know, wanting to put pen to paper, taking that intellectual capital and putting it on paper. That comes from a love of reading. So, yeah, absolutely.
Wow, wow. There is so much to unpack in your response, but I first want to thank you so much for being a supporter of what we're doing here. Again, we started off with a focus on literacy. I am the publisher of Gumbel for the Soul Publications. We're celebrating 20 years, and our focus Our focus actually began with inspirations for people of color. At that time, I started a somewhat literacy program at my kitchen table. My son was in the seventh grade. My daughter was in the, like, fourth grade. But one of their, my son's playmates in the neighborhood, he was held back a grade, and he had every electronic. At that time, he had a cell phone. This was years ago. I'm talking about a son that's 31 now, right? So he had, he had these electronics. He had the, you know, electric car that you're actually driving outside on the sidewalk. His parents were divorced. So what they were doing was giving him all of these material things. So every time he'd see one parent or the other, you know, they're blessing or gifting him with these toys. And this child is failing. And my son couldn't understand why in the world he would get his Game Boy taken and on restriction and this and everything and the other if he wasn't up to par with his learning. So when I started Gumbel for the Soul, it was to really help with the lack that was taking place, and I switched from inspirations to literacy. The children reading in church, they lacked the command of the literature that they were reading, and they struggled, and you could tell. When I started speaking out the you know, the statistics for our graduation rate in high school, and our, I found out that we had a 50% dropout rate, a low college enrollment rate. And I just, at that point, I had already put out a press release. I had hundreds of submissions from around the world, and I put on the brakes. We do not need another inspirational. What we need to do is get a handle on literacy. And so that's where the birth of Gumbel for the Soul, the recipe for literacy in the Black community, was born. And I switched gears. We continue to garner many submissions, and we received the back cover endorsement from Tavis Smiley, the then PBS broadcasting host. So I'm saying all of this to say how important literacy and reading is, starting at home, at that kitchen table or wherever. Children need a quiet place to study. And the other part of my response to what you said was consistency. When I was married to Mr. Kenneth Johnson, no relation to our guest this evening, ladies and gentlemen, but that man said, above all, these children need consistency. And I planted that. So when children have the assured expectancy of this is what, you know, this is what they can expect. You know, they have a home, hopefully. They have meals. They have clean clothes, a quiet place to study, and the freedom and the joy and the loving environment of expressing themselves as we are not the same, and our children are not either. But my other response is I am sitting in front of 4 bookcases with a collection of over 500 books, and I do not give away books. If I give away a book, it's because I've ordered it on Amazon and sent it to you. Okay? But my home library, these books aren't going anywhere as far as I can see. And my eldest son, because I added my daughter's books, my eldest daughter's books from her African American studies from, you know, college to and her library to my library, and then the early days of starting Gumbo for the Soul and reviewing other authors and doing the radio show here and just continuing to grow over the 20-year span, this collection has grown to such. But it started at home with my mother. She absolutely demanded that we had proper command of the English language. And it's not that I was a great English student. I hated English in school. But the love for reading and going to the library and behaving, lining up single file as an elementary school student so we can have that treat to go to the library. The books that I would check out were international, were international in nature. Whereas what I'm saying is my horizons were broadened by the material that I read because the books took me away. It introduced me, like you speaking French. These books took me away and introduced me to different cultures and different people than the black and white world that I was in. And I began to have a love for learning and especially for other people, other cultures, other languages, other perspectives. And so, but my mother's books and her choice of books were of zero interest to me. They were romance, they were crime, drama, or whatever. So you don't have to necessarily love the same subjects, but when your children see you reading, they know that that's something important because you're not yik-yakking on the phone, you're not engaging in front of the TV, which my father called the idiot box, rest in peace, but you're reading something that is of substance, you're feeding your mind, they see this being mirrored, and you're creating an environment that allows them to do the same because everything, I mean everything, is predicated on being able to read. Now, in today's environment, you see so much illiteracy, and then that's embraced with acronyms for whole words and sentences, and really a lot of people that are actually born into this era and culture, they struggle because literacy is not absolutely unequivocally commanded as it were perhaps when you and I were growing up. And this is a societal problem with abbreviating and giving everything within our communicational realms these acronyms. Well, if you don't even know how to spell the proper word and you've used and been exposed to acronyms, chances are when you become an adult, you may not recognize the full spelling of the words, and that may cause learning disabilities. Now, we know, and then I'm going to ask you to bring out your leadership book and give us a list of the books that you have. But I want to briefly just put out there that within our integrated school systems, there is another layer, and that is called the preschool to prison pipeline. I'm not talking gaslighting, hyperbole, or however, I can't pronounce that word. You all know what I mean. I'm not perfect. But what I'm trying to say is that we have to arrest the minds of our children while they are yet at home and young and palpable, and their minds, like Pastor Johnson said, are sponges. It is our responsibility to plant within our children greatness, a seed of greatness, so that they can achieve and matriculate to their highest heights and embrace the greatest essence of achievement, and in a way that allows their individual uniqueness to also flourish, because they have different gifts planted inside of them. They don't need to become who we are. Let them be who they are. Now, Pastor, what about your books and leadership do we need to take away from this program? And please expound out of any one of your titles that segues to this moment and ties in all of our aforementioned. The floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all that you have shared with us during this segment. So, Leadership with a Servant's Heart is the title of the current series of books that I'm writing. The first one was released just before the pandemic, and we had started a national book tour in person. Then when the pandemic happened, we had to peel it back a little bit and, of course, complete that book tour virtually. But since that time, the second book has been released, and same title, but each of them have a slightly different subtitle. And what we're doing is we're focusing in on the heart. I always share with people that what we learn in the home as youngsters in terms of what to mirror and what to model is really coming from the heart. That's the emotional piece. That's the care, the value, the respect, the honor, the unconditional love. We learn that within the confines of the family unit, and we learn that at home. Once we move out into the local community and we move into the workplace, then we develop a subject matter expertise, depending on what industry and what work role you're in, whether it's construction or medicine or business or the sciences, the service industry, restaurants, whatever it might be, you and I develop a subject matter expertise so that we are really, really good at what we were hired to do, what we get paid for, those benefits that come along with it. Leadership with a Servant's Heart, I'm on a mission. And this is where I am in this season of life post-retirement, to work with and develop, coach, train, and mentor those who aspire to one day move into a leadership position, as well as those that are currently in a leadership position. I want them to learn something that you don't get in school and you don't get in seminary, and that is, how do you match your subject matter expertise your intellect and your acumen with what's in the heart, the respect, the care, the value, the honor, and love for the people that you're leading. Where those two intersect is what makes the best leaders. And just like I'm very adamant about the family unit, I'm also very adamant about leadership, because good leaders do help to make the world to be a much better place. You and I spend so much time at work, whether it's government, city, county, state, or federal, whether you work for a corporation, small, medium, or large, whether you work within the confines of the local church, in a nonprofit organization, or in an academic institution. Those are the five different pillars, if you would, I call them tentacles as well, of the marketplace. That's where people show up to work: government, corporations, churches, academic institutions, and nonprofits. When people show up to work and they spend a lot of time there, we're surrounded by people, and all of these people have different personalities, different mannerisms. They have different levels of work experience. They represent different geographical regions around the country, different generations, et cetera. And the hardest part about leadership is people, having to deal with people and lead people. But the best leaders, and the data is undeniably verifiable and validatable, are the leaders that show up knowing their stuff, because that's how you get credibility, but at the same time know how to demonstrate that they care for their people. And where those two make the best leaders. So leadership with a servant's heart is just that. It's not a weakness to be a leader that can demonstrate outwardly that you care for your people. That is not a weakness. That is actually a strength. And when leaders take the time to get to know their people and then allow themselves to be authentic and vulnerable and letting their people know them, now we're on our way to developing the next generation of leaders that really understand what leadership is all about. Times have changed. Technology has us in a different place, in a different space. Today's generation doesn't think and act like our parents. You know, things have changed. People have more access to information, and people want to know that when they show up to work, that that leader that's responsible for them is going to give them the space to be their best and to do their best, to be innovative, to be creative, not to be micromanaged, but be able to show that they have some worth and that their opinion matters. And when that doesn't happen, we live in a generation now where people will vote with their feet, and they're out of Dodge. And in part, that's what we saw in the pandemic. It was not a coincidence that many people resigned their position during the pandemic. Some of it was pandemic related, but a lot of it was people didn't really like showing up to their job because they weren't being led well. They didn't have opportunities for advancement. They were not recommended resources. They didn't get the training they needed. They weren't developed. And the pandemic was an opportunity to say, you know, I don't like being here anyway, so I'm out of here. They voted with their feet, and that's really what that was all about. So that's my current mission. That's my vision. That's my call. And the theme that we're working from as a part of this national book tour, we're going to be on a national book tour all the way through December 2023. It might even go into 2024. But we're going to be in 20 cities in 2023, and then we're also going to be in September in Kenya, Africa, and then in November we'll be in Dubai. And other cities might be added to the tour as well. Just leading a national conversation. I want people to talk about this. I want to have open dialogue and discussion. I want to get people's viewpoints and perspectives and opinions about leadership, and we want to have a conversation, and we're going to be operating from this theme: know better, do better, lead better. That's it right there. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk to my attorney to see if I can trademark it. So, know better.
That's right.
Do better, lead better. That's the theme that we're going to be operating from. So, aspiring leaders and current leaders at all levels, whether you're at the front line, the mid-level, or the senior level, we want to have a conversation with you. So we're going to be at libraries and bookstores. I have a great relationship with Barnes & Noble. We're going to be partnering with them and doing some things. Interestingly enough, we have a contract with Kroger Grocery Store. They have a national
awesome.
Offer program. Yeah, so I'm partnered with them. And
that is
going to be at,
congratulations.
Yeah, we're going to be at churches. Yeah, all that good stuff. So we want everybody out there who's listening to be a part of this journey.
Awesome. Congratulations on all that you are accomplishing and your travels, and much continued success to spreading such a necessary message. Now, if I had to summarize one sentence, and here again, I reflected back to a job I had in 2001, and I was going to say this. This was before you mentioned the word care. And I said, here he goes again. But what I remember, what I was going to summarize your response is, people don't care what you know until they know that you care. Now, yep. I was working for a huge corporation, communications corporation. This is the angle in which they trained us from. That slogan was on a poster in the training room. And this company was a Southern Bell-owned subsidiary. But the concept of really knowing people and our behavior, and I want to add to what you said in terms of our characteristics and what have you, I'm paraphrasing, right? The things that help us get to know one another and the interactions. We also have to have a understanding of our backgrounds and our socializations. And because we all have different backgrounds and different socializations, and just like love, the word love has a different meaning to everyone. So in your marriage, you and Gail, Mrs. Johnson, established what this love means. This forever, ever. You ain't going nowhere. When we come up with a problem, we're going to come up with a solution. This is forever, ever. He ain't going looking for another wife, and you not released to go look for another husband. He keeping you. And what our socializations tell each other is that we operate from a different perspective based on the environment that we were raised in and what we were introduced to in that environment. Now, one thing that I negated to say is that in 2020, and this is in reference to reading a book a month, in 2020, my mentor, who is the Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr., he is the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, led, trained, and mentored by the late, great Megger Wiley Evers. He is 85 years old. In 2020, he was 82 years old. So at 82 years old and being visually impaired, I read books to him. I told him, I'll be your eyes. And he provided, through artificial intelligence, audio books. So we blew through about 20 or more books. 2020 went by in a flash. 2021 went by in a flash. We actually had to pause on the reading because I'm a publisher and I had to switch over. And obviously I'm a radio show producer. So with so many plates spinning, maintaining a fine balance meant deferring our reading until 2023, which now I'm getting ready to go back to school. So I'll be reading, but I just probably won't be reading to him as much. But reading is very important for the sharpening of our minds and the continuation of learning the world around us. And finally, what I'm going to say is what you commented about reading in terms of comparing works of literature to whether it holds true to today. That is exactly what Dr. Jackson and I do. And I call that being able to thread that, you know, subject through the cloth. You're bringing that thread from the period of time back then in history to today's time. That thread is woven all the way through the different eras of time. And when you look at the politics, that's one era. When you look at civil rights and fighting for equality, that's another thing. It's rooted in our history as Black people, but also rooted in our history as Black people is greatness, achievements, high levels in office, authors, entertainers, singers. From the beginning of this country, we were there. The communities that were burned down, these weren't ghettos. They wouldn't waste their time. The ghettos are still standing. Okay? It was the thriving communities in our communities that were burned down. And so we come from a people and a legacy of greatness. And what we really want to do, no matter what your ethnicity and color is, what we really want to do is really show how small this world is and how connected we are. And we can do that through our interactions, through leadership, through education, through reading, through exposing our children to the opportunities that lie and are available in this world to them. They're there. And so, Pastor, I want to thank you for your leadership and for what you are sacrificing time and energy and family time, taking to the airwaves, being here on Tribe Family Channel, writing, conferences, and your travels. So I wish you blessed travels, but I wish you the best of success in all of the endeavors that are before you. And I just cannot wait to see, and I'll be sharing when I see the postings and the promotions and what have you. Any final words and thoughts of leadership? Do you have any final thoughts of based on leadership that you want to leave with our audience, with our parents, with our children, with me?
Well, in closing, I'll just kind of summarize it in terms of everything that we've talked about. You know, communication is one of the many different areas that we talk about in terms of leadership. And remember that we communicate three ways. We communicate with our words, of course. That makes perfect sense. But how we say what we say, which is the tone, and then also the body language that aligns with what we say. And here's the takeaway that I want all of us to think about. And this is why I say walk to walk and talk to talk, because people are always watching, but they may not necessarily say anything. People pick up so much more on what they see than what they actually hear. And so about 7% of how we communicate are actually the words that we say, only 7%, because of human behavior, we don't really remember most of what people say. We just don't. Most of it is forgotten within 3 to 4 hours, unless you write it down. But when you combine how we say it, that's the tone, and then the complementary body language that goes with it, and that also includes facial expression, that represents 93% of how we communicate. And so equally important in terms of what people see as it is in terms of what people hear, because both of those comprise the total communication package. So when it comes to leadership, again, it kind of goes back to how I answered your first question when we started this session, walk the walk and talk the talk, because people are watching us and they mirror and emulate what we do, not necessarily what we say. So how we say the word is the tone, and then the accompanying body language and facial expressions add some additional emphasis to what we say, and that represents 93% of how we communicate. The words that we say only represent 7%. And so it kind of circles back to what you just said, and we remember that Maya Angelou is the one that gets credit for saying it.
Oh, God, if you don't stop. Go ahead on. People will never forget how you make them feel.
Yep. I mean, think about it. You know, how many people have you been? How many people have you been around in your life? And this is a question for everybody out there in the audience. How many people have you been around in your life? You know they know their stuff. They're experts at what they do. But they have made it perfectly clear they don't care nothing about you. As a matter of fact, you're in their way, you're a nuisance. And when that happens, you don't give a care about how much they know, because you know they don't really care about you. So they may be the leader in title or position, but you don't really respect them and you don't really honor them. I've been there. I've had to work for a couple of knuckleheads that were know-it-alls. And guess what? They were very, very good in terms of their acumen and their intellect. But we also know that they didn't care about us. And so it was very, very difficult to take direction from them and to follow them and to want to be on their team. And that's not the type of leader that any of us want to be.
Honor your worth. Now, of course, in the final segment of your responses and words of wisdom, you once again took where I was going, because everything that you are saying reminded me of our dearly beloved Maya Angelou. People will never forget how you make them feel. And you are so spot on. It's just a testament of like-mindedness and the wisdom that I draw from your words. So I really, really want to thank you for taking out the time. Where can our listeners connect with you before we play our outro? And we certainly want to remind everyone this is episode 3. If you want to hear the archives and go back and grab these gems of wisdom that Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson has dropped on us, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. And this literary festival will be happening through this Saturday. Same tribe, family channel, same tribe family number. So we hope that you have enjoyed these first 3 days and will continue to tune in. So Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson, once again, thank you so much. You really, really, really left our audience and me with some genuine gems and pearls of wisdom. And where can they connect with you and get your publications?
Well, Leadership with a Servant's Heart is the title of the book. It's available at Target.com. It's available at BarnesandNoble.com, of course, Amazon, and everywhere that books are sold. So Leadership with a Servant's Heart. And you can also just reach out to KevinWayneJohnson.com. That'll take you directly to my LinkedIn profile, KevinWayneJohnson.com. I use my full name because Kevin Johnson is a relatively common name. And I knew early on in this writing journey that started 20 years ago that I would be at it for a while. And because it's a common name, my son's name is also Kevin Johnson. I wanted to make sure that people knew it was me. So that's why I use my full name. But KevinWayneJohnson.com, and then the email address is Kevin@KevinWayneJohnson.com, and I always do my best to respond within 2 days. That's a basic customer service attribute about me that I like to make sure that I recognize and acknowledge others' emails by responding within 2 days. So those are the best ways to reach out to me, and look forward to continued engagement with you and the listening audience and all the great work that you're doing at the Tribe Family Channel Literary Festival.
Thank you so very much. And we have really chewed up this hour. I knew that it would be an amazing and eventful because I have really collected the gems that you have spoken. So this to me is eventful. It lets me also know that my thought processes line up with your leadership, your leadership profile, if you will. And so we have to honor our worth, but we also have to take an inventory and be willing to measure our cup and make sure that we have the right contents for that which we are seeking to achieve. So I'm just so honored that you would be here this evening again. Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson, founder, CEO, and the publisher of Writing for the Lord Ministries. Now, are your books available autographed if they want to reach out to you directly and purchase Author Direct? Is that possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can definitely make that happen. Again, just reach out to me by email, Kevin@KevinWayneJohnson.com. That email will come directly to me, and I'll be more than happy to make those arrangements so I can sign it and then put it in the mail to you. Not a problem.
Ooh, awesome, awesome, awesome. Thank you once again. And ladies and gentlemen, this concludes episode 3 of our literary festival. Have a blessed evening, Pastor Johnson. And again, Happy New Year. Happy New Year's to you and yours. Have a blessed, blessed one, and we will talk soon.
All right. Happy New Year.
Good night, and God bless. And again, ladies and gentlemen, you can catch the archives of this episode at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. Tribe Family Channel is a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly Black, all rights reserved. Good night, and God bless.
yourself. Yeah, country loves. Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood.
Tri-Family Channel.